Hello?
Hey, B. It's Mom.
Hey, how are you?
Hotty-toddy.
You got to be pretty excited about Ole Miss.
Oh, I am just so proud of the Magnolia State. Mississippi State's number one, Ole Miss number three.
Really?
Yes. I am so excited. The South shall rise again, as Amy said, my sister said.
You might not want to revive that saying yet. It might be a little too soon.
Oh, but we're all so excited. I was listening, and they were saying, yeah, I think Ole Miss, Mississippi State have the two best defense teams in the, you know, in the league, and said, oh, wait, they have the two best teams, so go Mississippi. We've got some tough boys out there. Well, did you watch any of it?
I didn't catch either of those.
Well, if you don't watch the SEC, you don't need to watch anything.
Good point.
That's the only thing to watch. But anyway, yeah, we've been busy with football, and then I did, you know, some speaking engagements, and that was fun.
Well, and that's what I was wanting to ask you about, because you were telling me about these speaking engagements, and you were talking about the kind of different attitude that the parents had, and you were saying, oh, we should get an expert to talk about that. I thought, well, you're the expert, so you should just talk about it.
Oh, well, thanks for the compliment. Well, I am seeing difference. You know, I used to say, you know, at first we called parents, you know, helicopter parents. Then we called them Black Hawk Down parents. And,
yeah.
You know, I kept saying, okay, relax, relax. And the last few engagements, the mothers and fathers that I've talked to, they do seem to have they've relaxed a little bit. And they're giving their children some more responsibilities, but most of all, they're expecting more from their children. Hmm. They're, you know, they're letting them make more mistakes, and they're not getting as protective, as over-involved with them. And I see this as something really significant, and I'm applauding them. I think it's great.
I was wondering, and this, because my natural thought is, where does this come from, the shift in attitude? And I was wondering if this is the lineage of it, is when you kind of started doing I would say the bulk of your kind of parent groups was early 2000s, and that was,
right.
You know, 9/11 happened, and there was all this anxiety. We kind of went from a nation of being, didn't have any problems, to where this like looming threat of terrorism, where you got the helicopter parents, and that, I think that maybe preceded the next, you know, several years, where now, in a way, the news is so depressing, and you have terrorism and Ebola and, you know, threats from everywhere, that you start to kind of realize you can't just be that protective, that there's sort of this broad spectrum of ills out there, where before maybe they thought they could just protect him from this one thing, but now it's widespread.
Oh, I agree. It's almost, and it's sad, it shifted, like now we know how to live with all these terrible, horrible, no good, very bad threats.
Right.
Because when I first started speaking, it was the Oklahoma City bombing. Remember that?
Oh, yeah. That's right. Okay.
That happened. Then Columbine happened. Remember that?
Yeah.
That was the first real school shooting. And, of course, those have continued. Then, of course, 9/11. So all of these things hit, and parents just gasped and said, oh, my gosh, how can I protect my kids?
And I feel like those were very singular threats. It was school shootings, and then it was terrorism. And now it's school shootings, terrorism, plagues, economic crisis. You know, now that the list is so diversified, you can't kind of dwell on one or the other.
Exactly. It just kept hitting. And remember in 2008, how bad the economy got. And so we really were in a state of angst. And I do think we still live in angst, but we're more able to cope with it now. And now, instead of, sometimes we get overprotective and think that we can make it go away, where now we're saying, this is a reality. How do I choose to deal with this reality? I know I can't protect them against everything. And what can I do? You know, how can I? And, you know, think about this, Butler, in, you know, in 1999, I wasn't talking about technology with parents.
That's
you know,
point.
And it was like what they saw in the news. Well, now parents realize they can't protect their kids from all the terrible news that's going on. Their kids get it before they do sometimes.
Yeah,
you know?
That's a good point.
It's so widespread. I mean, I look at the parents. See, the parents today are in, you know, gosh, they're in their 30s and 40s. They're the Gen Xers and some millennials. And they're struggling so, too, about how to keep the news away from their kids, knowing they can't. And you think about their kids, the kids today, 11 and 12-year-olds, if we showed them Friends, you know, the TV sitcom Friends, and they saw four or five friends sitting in a coffee shop actually talking to one another, they would be going, what? Where are their iPhones? Because if it was a today's version, they'd be sitting there with their iPhones looking up the news or texting the one sitting across, you know, the sofa from them.
Yeah,
and so
you're right.
Everything's so much faster that I think we've come to the realization we can't keep it from them, but what we can do is help them process it and deal with it.
And I think that when you get these kind of mythically whimsical views of days past, when they're, oh, things were so much better back in the day, like the 50s or the 60s, there's actually a reason for that. And I think that is, it goes back to, in terms of kind of a national anxiety, it was the Soviet Union and the threat of nuclear annihilation. And the lack of news availability, it was more spare, it came from the TV or the radio. So even though that nuclear annihilation is sounds terrible and very, very anxiety-laden, the fact that it was a singular thing with a known enemy, I think made it a simpler time as well.
It was so much simpler, and we didn't know that much about it, and I actually fell for that thing. If we would do the duck and cover, we'd be okay.
Oh, yeah, you'd just be fine. Just hide under a desk.
Yeah, just get under your desk. You're going to be okay, you know. Yeah, we were scared of Castro in Cuba. I told you, Daddy Cal told me to stay away from the Mississippi River because of the bad undercurrents. If I fell in that Mississippi River, those undercurrents would pull my skinny ass all the way to Cuba. And I was like, oh, no. So all I had to do was duck and cover and stay out of the Mississippi River, and I was going to be okay. But, you know, today the kids do know so much, and the parents are trying to, they know now they can't protect them from all that, but they can. You know, parents today, my heart goes out to them. They've got so much more to deal with than I did with y'all growing up. But I do think that they see that, when 60% of college graduates returned home to live a couple of years ago, I think parents did start saying, wait a minute. And the shift that I see is parents are now saying, oh, wait a minute, I cannot protect them from everything, but I really do need to help them know how to go out there and take care of themselves and help give them the tools to grow up and become responsible adults and know how to leave me. So I do think that shift is taking place.
And I think that whole kids coming back to live with their parents was another hard reality just nationwide of it's no longer this very simple model of you know, go to school, go to high school, go to college, get a job, that it's not that a college degree isn't a guarantee anymore. And so it's also, it forced a reevaluation of other things and kind of what you pursue and how you push them and what the ultimate goal is. Because just getting to college isn't it anymore.
Yeah, and we had, you know, a few years ago, we started grasping and understanding and accepting the fact at one time we always thought our children would do better in life than we did. And now we're having to accept the fact our kids might not ever have it as good as we've had it.
Right.
And that's a real shift in thinking.
And that's on a number of levels. I mean, it's, I think that also plays into an interesting point about the climate change debate and how now I think the younger generation will sort of has embraced it so much because in a way they're kind of pissed off for these previous generations ruining the planet as well.
Yeah, and not taking care of it and, you know, using up what should be theirs. And that's, you know, in the economy and the environment and whatever. You know, and I mean, we baby boomers are the ones they, you know, that the fingers are pointed to that, you know, we've ruined a lot of stuff, which... Well, maybe so. I mean, I'm not going to say too much. I can't say too many bad things about my generation.
Right.
But, you know, we are the me generation that can't get enough. And we are to blame for a lot of it. But at the same time, you know, I think we did give our kids, our children, the ability to go out and make a difference in the world, because I do see the Gen Xers and the millennials are, I see them as real altruistic generations.
I think so. I think they're more engaged with seeing the world as an internet community as opposed to just seeing what's happening on their front doorstep.
Absolutely. I'm proud. I mean, I like these generations, and I like what I'm seeing with these generations. I like that, I mean, I do wish the moms would get off those damn cell phones and talk to their kids more. And, I mean, they're out strolling their kids and talking on the cell phone, and, you know, that bothers me. And when they're eating lunch with them to be, you know, I do wish they would put down some of the technology to have more conversations. And I will say I'm jealous when I see a mom in the grocery store and the child's not throwing pork and bean cans out of the cart under the floor instead playing those games, you know. That's nice. But, you know, I do think that we're realizing we've got to let our kids go let go of them a little bit and adventure the world and learn for themselves. We had that big controversy at your old alma mater, your high school, and where they banned a small group of parents got together and demanded that seven of the books on the reading list for the high school be suspended. And they wanted them banned. And
they were classics. There was like a book by Toni Morrison. I can't remember which one. There was
and Glass
Sid Hartha.
Castle. And,
Running
in the Rain. I mean, come on. But they wanted them banned because, you know, they had things about, you know, homosexuality and some sex, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, let them read about it rather than go out and have sex. Come on, you know, really. But anyway, they wanted them banned and all this kind of stuff. And what happened was they started it and the school started listening to them. But then more and more and more people came up and rebelled against it, said, no, don't ban these books. You know, we want our children to be able to read these books. So there were more parents that didn't want them banned that did. And I thought that was another way of kind of gauging. No, they said, let them read the books. We'd like to talk to them about the books. Now, I personally, I thought, well, I'm glad that they talked about banning them, because don't you know every kid at Highland Park High School read those books now?
Exactly. The minute you tell a teenager that they can't have it, that's the hottest commodity around.
But so, I mean, I think things are, I'm kind of even scared to say this word, but can I maybe stretch it and say maybe parents are lightening up a little bit, relaxing a little bit?
Yeah, I think so, and I think that's not so much a function of just they are more relaxed. I think they're just learning how to adjust to this new reality.
Absolutely. Accepting the new reality.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's kind of where it all stems from.
I do too. I agree, Big.
I'm susceptible to your lies. I want to be objectified without concern for systems. Naturally nervous disposition brims with concerns and contradictions. The contrapositive impoverished heart stems, and I'm Bart Simpson. I've known the nothingness of chaos. I've known the somethingness of fake gods. I've been out of place like transitional lenses, comma splices in a suspended sentence. Kiss the nose of the vulture, destroy the bro culture. That's what I was sent to do with a paper box of cherry cordials. Already forgot what I meant to prove. We can eat gray clumps of sky. Melancholy men are always witty, and I wonder why. We can eat gray clumps of sky. Melancholy men are always witty, and I wonder why. So I kicked the air like I'm Bruce Lee, and I mumbled like I'm Toon Chi, and I felt it in my cheekbones. I kicked the air like I'm Bruce Lee, and I mumbled like I'm Toon Chi, and I felt it in my cheekbones.